In his new book, journalist and anthropologist Scott Carney writes, humans love comfort to the point of absurdity, and as a result, we're crippled with anxiety, autoimmune conditions, fatigue, loneliness, and a generalized sense of unease. His solution is to learn how to tolerate being uncomfortable, and he does so in some very unusual ways in his book, which is called The Wedge, Evolution, Consciousness, Stress, and the Key to Human Resilience. Scott Carney, welcome to Here and Now.
Jeremy, thanks for having me on.
Well, and first, explain what you mean by the wedge.
So the wedge is essentially separating stimulus from response in the body. So putting yourself in a stressful situation, such as ice water, something that demands all of your attention, and then choosing what your body does in that stressful reaction. So your natural response in ice water would be to clench up and fight that stimulus and instead relax and let your body find a different way to heat itself. And what I've learned is that if you're able to put yourself under lots of different sorts of physical stresses and that give you really loud sensations that tell your body to do something automatically, we have a certain ability to intervene, which gives us not only physical resilience, but also emotional resilience.
How do you get yourself in a, let's say, a very cold pool of water to not feel like you're freezing and going to die if you stay in there for that long?
We're addicted to comfort in America, right? And in the West in general. And we have this idea that if we just insulate ourselves from the variations of the environment, that's sort of like how to keep ourselves safe and cozy. But that's not where we evolved from, right? We grew up in the constant varying temperatures in the plains of Africa, and we were used to dealing with extremes. So when you jump into an ice bath, you might get that signal of imminent death, but it's because we, in general, don't expose ourselves to stressors anymore. And what you find is that once you do it, once you actually, let's say you're just taking a cold shower, it's more difficult to turn the knob to cold than it is to sit under the actual cold water. So it's really your emotions that are getting in the way and not really the cold from the environment.
Well, and to your point about, the plains of Africa, whereas we used to use things like anxiety and fear based on like some animal chasing us, we now will use it and get really worried and anxious about a meeting that's coming up tomorrow at the office or something like that.
The lion example is great, right? You know, that's when the threat was real. There's a lion, let's say it's running at you, and your body is primed to respond, right? You're going to dump adrenaline to give you energy. You're going to dump cortisol. That's going to lower your, you know, increase your pain threshold. And your body is there to go into fight or flight. You're going to deal with that response with a physical activity. Now, when you fast forward into the modern world, we're not fighting lions, right? The threats are now sort of remote, you know, they're almost existential. And, you know, if you're fretting over your 401k or worried about your N95 mask or whatever it is you're doing, you're still releasing those stress hormones into your body. And those hormones have no place to go. And they make you feel anxious. They make you feel sort of overwhelmed. So what I'm trying to do and what I'm trying to suggest is that there's ways to give yourself stimuli that are appropriate for that adrenaline when you release it. And managing yourself under physical stress, that gives you emotional resilience.
So you have decided to try out a lot of different things in this book to sort of get in touch with yourself and change the way your body responds to your surroundings, including an exercise involving kettlebells. Tell me about that and what you did there, why you did that.
Yeah, this has been like the most amazing discovery for me because the kettlebell section sort of started with me hanging out at a neuroscience lab at Stanford where I'm swimming with virtual sharks in a shark tank, which the neuroscience behind it was really interesting because I wanted to control myself in a fearful situation. But there's something about videos of sharks that just don't like trigger those automatic emotions in me. So I was walking out of Stanford's like basically front doors when I get this call from a friend of mine in the Bay Area who said, Scott, you got to go hang out with my friend Michael Castrogiovanni, who's going to throw kettlebells at you and going to put you into an instantaneous flow state, which I think probably gets the award for the lamest text message ever, you know. But I had this feeling, I was like, okay, I'm going to give it a try. And I meet this guy, Michael, and he's holding what amounts to a weapon in his hand. Like, it's a cannonball, right? It's this big piece of metal, and he's going to throw it at me. And in this moment, I realize that I have that stimulus that's going to make me really, really scared. And the ritual with kettlebell throwing goes like this. You know, he looks at your eyes and he swings it once in the air and you're looking at each other. And then on the second swing, he doesn't let go. Instead, you shift your eyes to that thing, which is definitely going to fall on my foot in a second, right? And on the third swing, it flies through the air and my hand just sort of automatically grasps the handle as it floats through the air, and I throw it back to him. And now this fearful sensation, because everyone's thinking, oh my God, you are going to break your foot. You're going to break your knee. It's going to hit you, right? But what happens is the movement is so simple, and the danger is so obvious that you have to pay attention to it, that instead our movements start coordinating automatically, and we go from being in this fearful state to essentially dancing with kettlebells. And I realize that this is ultimately about trust by creating a threat that forces the attention that your body can give it. And it becomes this really beautiful practice.
But does something like that have a lasting impact on the way that you see the world or interact with people?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Eleanor Roosevelt once said, you know, do one thing every day that scares you, because it's pushing your boundaries, right? The first time you throw the kettlebell or catch a kettlebell, it's such a powerful stimulus going from fear into joy that you will remember that. If you see a couple throw a kettlebell, usually they're terrible at it at first. These trust things come out in their movements. And so the guy who invented this says that it's like couples therapy to watch this happen. They learn, you know, usually very quickly to communicate physically without words, because you're facing something that's visceral and then you're modulating it and realizing that this can be fun. This can be a joyful experience.
There are so many other things you talk about in this book as you sort of went through a journey of trying to get in touch with yourself in a number of different ways, including, you know, eating only potatoes and breathing exercises, but also some drugs. And I want to talk to you about one of them, because I'm just curious about your experience with it, which is you in this book, you go to South America, as some people do, to take ayahuasca.
Yes.
Tell me what was the purpose of that experience, and what was it like?
So throughout the whole book, I am putting myself in very loud situations, like things that command my attention. And, you know, ayahuasca is a thing that a lot of people are talking about right now, right? It's this hallucinogen that releases this chemical called DMT, and then it modulates that chemical by making it last a really, really long time in your mind. But
apparently a lot of people in Silicon Valley, a lot of the big names in Silicon Valley like to try ayahuasca. It's been reported.
Right. Well, no, it's definitely true. And it gives you a different perspective on things. But you can think about a wedge as just a stimulus outside your body, for instance, the ice bath. But one other place you can put the wedge is actually in your synaptic pathways, in the chemicals that actually transmit messages in your brain. For me, I wanted to connect with the universe. I had these huge questions about, you know, God, about spirituality, about who am I as a person. But instead, what ayahuasca showed me, you know, it was basically like a counselor. Like it sort of showed up and you sort of talk to it almost like an external thing. It's very strange. And the shamans would say you're talking to the spirit of the plant. But it might just be your own psychology. The challenge is to remain in control, right? The fear is that you're going to go mad and you're never going to come back and you're never going to be the same. And what you're trying to do is make that change happen in a beneficial way. And I wouldn't recommend ayahuasca to everyone, but it is something that if you're called to it, it can be very, very powerful and very, very transformative. And for me, I ended up kicking an addiction because of it.
Interesting. You take a lot of risks in this book. You say that we all should be taking more risk, that there's a risk to not taking risk. What are the kind of risks that you think that we as Americans in particular ought to be taking more?
We need to move outside of our comfort zones. You know, in Latin, there's this idea, memento mori, and it's something that we've lost in this culture. And instead, we avoid it. And in your nervous system, avoidance of death you know, is good, right? That's what allows us to pass on our genes. But ignoring it, it makes us not take risks. And if you don't take risks, you don't grow and you can't find out what you are capable of. And I think that our tendency is to be numb, right? We want to be comfortable. We want to insulate ourselves. And when we do that, we exist in a narrower and narrower range of where we're able to feel comfortable. If we instead give ourselves strong signals, which is not to say dangerous. Like, I don't want you to hurt yourself, but I want you to expand the ability for you to act in the world. And realizing that sensations, the things that we feel, are guideposts for how we act in the world, but they are not the commands. You don't need to live your life jumping out of airplanes and doing crazy drugs all the time and only looking for the loud signal, but you do need to be capable of facing that loud signal. And that's what I think is the you know, secret to life.
That is Scott Carney, who is a journalist, an anthropologist, and the author of the new book, The Wedge: Evolution, Consciousness, Stress, and the Key to Human Resilience. Scott, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on.